G'day everyone, and welcome to A Place to Call Home podcast. On this episode, I chat to Chris Giles from Generate Repo in Charters Towers. On this episode, we chat about a range of different topics, from bull testing, AIing, embryo transfer, you name it, we touch on it. It was a great chat and one I learnt a bucket load from. And we also touched a bit more and heard a bit more from Chris and his story about how he started Generate Repo, and then also why he's based himself in Charters Towers. I must say a big thank you to Chris. I kind of threw him in the deep end a couple of times throughout the interview, and he generously just shared his knowledge very openly, which is awesome, and I definitely got a lot out of it. I brought Chris on following on from an early episode where we were talking about AI, and a fair few of you guys reached out to me and said, "Hey, look, Sam, we want to learn a bit more." So if there's any other topics like this that you guys want to learn a bit more of or are interested in that will help you on your land ownership journey, be sure to take a moment and send me a message and I'll try and source a bit of an expert in the industry. Anyway, before we jump into this week's episode, I want to say a massive thank you to the Season podcast partner and also this episode's podcast partner, Entola Trading. You would have seen me getting around some of their flash shirts, and I am very grateful and very thankful for Entola for jumping on board. A big thank you to Entola, and if you want to get one for yourself, be sure to check them out and keep your ear out, because about halfway through we're going to release a special code that will get you $20 off your next order. So once again, thank you very much Entola for jumping on board, and I hope you guys enjoy the episode. Cheers. But to kick things off, I'd just like to say thank you very much for jumping on the Place to Call Home podcast.
My pleasure.
Mate, before we get too far into the conversation, can you just give us a brief introduction of yourself, where you're from and what you're up to?
Yeah, Chris Giles is my name. Born and bred in Victoria originally. Now reside in Charters Towers, running Generate Reproduction.
Mate, how'd that go coming from Victoria down to, up to Charters Towers? Mate, a bit of a change in environment.
I was accustomed to the change. I'd left school at an early age and went to work at Lake Nash.
Yep.
Kicked across there for a couple of years and then floated back down home, went back to Lake Nash for a few more years and went back down breaking horses. And
so growing up, what were you up to in Victoria? Were you off a place up down there, or where did you grow up?
No, very much in the city of Wodonga.
Yep.
It's not huge, but it's a border town there, Albury-Wodonga. No connection to the land at all. Probably the closest thing was going out to a friend's place every chance I could. He had a couple of hundred acres on the Murray River.
Yep.
That was where my affinity for cattle and the country life sort of kicked off.
So what made you want to go to Lake Nash? That's a big shift going from Victoria to Lake Nash. It's a bit of country there.
Yeah, it was a big shock to the system at 15 years old.
15?
Yeah, halfway through year 10. Hadn't hit my 16th birthday yet. And I was a bit of a rat in school. Wasn't the best student. Trouble focusing. And the principal called me in and said, "Look, you obviously don't want to be here. You're passing your grades, passing your classes all with flying colours. Your teachers are happy with your ability. We'll give you your year 10 certificate now if you want to go."
Yeah.
And that's how I did.
What was it? Why did you want to get out of school? You just weren't enjoying it. You didn't like that type of learning? Because it's an interesting one. I think a lot of people drawn to the bush, and it's just – it's the way people, you know, there's three different ways. Was it kinesthetic, whatever it is, different type of learning. And I know for myself, I struggled at school, but I love hands-on learning and doing stuff practically. Was it the same for you? Is that what you needed to get out and about and learn by doing?
Yeah, very much so.
Yeah.
I struggle reading things. Writing's a big downfall of mine.
Yeah.
Struggle with that a lot. And school, you got a lot, write a lot. And when you struggle with that constantly, it was just it built up, and I didn't want to be there and wanted to go.
So, Chris, you went up to Lake Nash for a bit, But like I said, we definitely would have been a culture shock for you. And you came back. So you went back and forth for a while. You were doing a bit of horse breaking around Victoria after that. Is that right?
Yeah. So went up first, had my 16th birthday there at the rec club on Lake Nash. did 2 years there, two years there, two seasons. Come back for a couple of years. Went down a bit of a rabbit hole back in the city, not in a good place.
Yep.
Rang George Scott back up, said, can I come back up? He said, yeah, love to have you. So went back up there and did another 4 years, ended up running the camp for two or three of those.
Mate, just touching on that, like a lot of people never get that experience of working out in the territory and running a camp like that. But what was it like? Like what are some of the key things you learned running a camp in the territory on a station like Lake Nash?
Yeah, responsibilities was a big thing. You know, we'd pack up camp and take everything we needed, get topped up with food, but we'd be gone for 4 or 6 weeks at a time out mustering with our camp, everything there. And at a young age, in charge of 10 to 12 people, helicopter in the sky, horses and bikes going everywhere. Yeah, it really taught me a lot on how to manage people. Probably didn't do that the best sometimes, but.
But how old were you when you were running the camp?
21, I think, was the first year.
And is this things I like, you know, they talk about this in the corporate environment and stuff like that, and I don't think people quite understand, like running a camp like you are, you're in charge of, what'd you say, 10 men?
Yeah, we had 10 or 10 or 11, yeah.
And then on top of that, I don't know, like Lake Nash is a big station, so I'm guessing each muster would have been a couple of thousand head you're bringing into the yards.
On average, yeah, the paddocks are anywhere from 1,200 to 2,000 head of breeders.
Yep. So, you know, at that stage at 21, you're running a team of 10 men, you're mustering in 2,000 head of breeders. So today that's worth $2 million worth of investment sitting there. Like it's a massive responsibility for someone so young. Like did you ever reflect on that when you were there?
Probably didn't appreciate the trust that was put into me by the manager, George. You know, I come from nowhere, certainly come from background of cattle or anything, and he obviously saw something in me and gave me the opportunity, and I'm always grateful for him, yeah.
Touching on that opportunity, it's something I love agriculture, and I think it's an industry of so much opportunity in it. And like you said, if you're willing to even go and see the opportunity, they will keep coming for you, coming towards you. And to repaying that, you were there for 4 years, is that right? You were running the camp for 4 years at Lake Nash?
Yeah, pretty much. The first year was in and out of the camp. First year back after my second stint was in and out of the camp, driving the road train, you know, another huge responsibility at such a young age, six decks on a 904 Kenworth, worth $1 million there, driving that down to yards, loading wieners, going and pulling boars with the boar truck. I used to love pulling windmills, and I just, loved that environment.
So what made you finish up there? And head back, is that right? You headed back south after you finished up running the camp?
I just sort of probably burned out a bit up there. Away from the family, away from sort of didn't have any connection up there in a family sense. So I headed back home, started breaking in a few horses, living on the couch at my auntie's place. Yeah, that was really different to what I'd been doing for the past few years, yeah.
So the reason why I got you on board is that one of our previous guests, Cody Rogers, talked about AIing, and we're very much going to hit that topic, and this is how you started getting into AIing and what you're doing now at Generate Repo. So with your breaking in, how did you go from breaking in horses to start milking stallions, you know, starting that AIing journey with horses first up? Where did that begin?
Yeah, my artificial reproductive journey started with horses. started breaking in horses and then moved into breeding horses. I was managing a newly formed equine reproduction centre outside of Ballarat. Got a couple of vets on board. I was sort of managing the day-to-day there. And then as time went on, slowly hung around enough to want to learn the ins and outs of reproduction. It really fascinated me what you could do in that sort of area and the art of getting genetics from the other side of the world and getting a pregnancy here is really fascinating.
So what type of horses were you working on? Were they mainly cutting horses, race horses, or what was the main horses that were coming through?
So quarter horses, polo horses, and standardbreds.
Yeah.
For a lot of them. Thoroughbreds, you can't actually do any artificial reproductive work.
Yeah, right.
They all have to be live cover. So no AI allowed in the thoroughbred industry. But, yeah, so I started doing the scanning of mares, AI-ing, handling the stains, doing the collection and freezing, and then, yeah, ended up doing embryo transfer work as time went on. Yeah.
So before we go too far along your journey, can you just break that down? Like, what is AI-ing? What is the process of it? And then, like you said, embryo transfer, what is that for those who don't know?
So artificial insemination is AI.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the art of taking semen, whether it's frozen or chilled, shipped chilled from, we used to do a lot of chilled semen from New Zealand, shipped across on Qantas for the trotters, and then AI'd. That's, you've got to try and scan the mare enough that when you know she's getting ready to ovulate, give her an ovulating drug, she will then ovulate in a set period of time, and you've got to get that semen into her at the right time.
Yep.
And the same occurs when you're doing embryo transfer. Same process, except 7 days after AI, you're going to do a uterine flush. So you're going to put a catheter in the cervix, fill the cervix up with a flushing media, pull all that fluid out, and then search for it in a dish, find the embryo, hopefully, and then transfer that into a recipient mare.
And thanks for that description. It fascinates me, and it's something that's why I wanted you on the podcast. And I'm probably getting a bit ahead of myself, but I just wanted you to explain that while we're continuing the conversation. So as you went up from Melbourne, you went up to Rocky, is that right? And you started doing some work up there and started going towards beef, is that right?
Yeah, so I'd had an idea to start stepping into a bit more beef down there where we were working. There was a need for it locally. Smaller producers wanted someone to come in AI, so I started investigating that sort of cattle a bit more. I went up to a morphology course in Wagga, morphology is another key term used in the industry at the moment.
Can you give us an explanation on that?
Yeah, so morphology is the study, or andrology is the study of sperm cells.
Mm-hmm.
So motility and morphology are two different things. People get them mixed up quite a bit because they sound similar. But motility is basically the movement, how many are alive. So if you see on a semen report, the motility might be 80%, which just means there's 80% alive.
Swimmers, yeah.
Progressively motile. And then morphology is the structural soundness of the cells themselves.
Yep.
So you've got to put that under a big microscope, analyze 100 different cells, categorize them normal, and then there's 7 other defects. Well, there's quite a few others, but they all get narrowed into 7 primary defects. And then if they're above 70, above 60, 70, 80, 90%, you know, they're all
they're a proven sire.
If they're above 50% to 69%, they're deemed a qualifier, which is good for herd use.
Yep.
Multi-sire herd use. If they're 70 or above, then they're deemed good for single sire stud use. Yeah.
So we're talking about bull testing and stuff now. And stallion testing?
It happens the same in stains.
Yep.
It's andrology isn't breed specific.
Yep.
Species specific. Yeah.
So you started focusing on going into beef when you were at Rocky.
So I'd gone to an andrology course.
Yep.
Ran into an old friend or connected with an old friend there. She was up in Rockhampton running a collection centre up there, and she'd asked me to come up and manage that, which was a great opportunity. So I grabbed that, came up to Rockhampton.
Yeah. How many years were you at Rocky running or managing that centre? Yeah. So is this where you were building this equine centre, or you were helping get this equine centre going? Is this right?
No, that was in Ballarat.
That was in Ballarat?
So the equine centre was in Ballarat. Then I stepped into beef when I came up to Rockhampton.
Yeah, okay.
I also, with my equine background, I facilitated the move for that centre to also step into horses.
Yep.
So we became a multi-species operation there, which was great for business there. Yeah.
So from Rocky, 2 years, up to Charters, is that right?
Yeah, so whilst I was at Rocky, I did a trip up to Big Country Bull Sale and Charters.
Yep.
Got overwhelmed with the response there of people wanting a closer option.
Yep.
The only option for people in the north was to either get their semen collected from their sire and then sent down to Rockhampton,
mm-hmm.
or send their animal to Rockhampton. Either were great options. And so I started working on the idea to put a centre in the north. I took the option to the people I was working for in Rocky. They saw no interest or had no interest in going north. They wanted to focus more on south.
Yep.
So I started putting together a bit of a business plan and an action plan to get Generate going.
So as you're starting out, it was just yourself cruising around, or what was the actual process, or where did you start? Were you going to people's properties, milking bulls or milking horses? Were you still working with horses, or was it just moving the cattle?
I put the horses on the back burner for a bit.
Yep.
And focus solely on cattle. It was a bit of a wild journey. Me and the wife decided we were going to try and have a go at this thing in Charters, so we jumped online and seen what rentals were available in Charters Towers, and which aren't a lot.
Yeah.
But just on that day there was a newly added property, 20 acres with a set of cattle yards.
Yeah, perfect.
So we jumped in the car and headed up to have a look. Got accepted for that rental. We signed a 12-year lease there, and that's where we started doing Generate in that lease block.
So starting out, what services did you have an offer for landowners around or beef producers around?
Semen testing, sire collection and freezing were the main two, yeah.
So touching on each one of those, semen testing, what's the process of semen testing and how do you go about it? And also, what should you be doing or how often should you be testing your bulls?
It's a personal sort of decision on what you want to do for your own operation, but yearly is a good recommendation for your sires. We'd go out on property, collect the bulls, crush side, look at the motility, and mm-hmm. then take a small sample back to run a morphology, and then we'd send you out a report.
So with the motility, what are some of the percentages that we should be looking at? As owning a few bulls, what should we be aiming for?
Again, it depends on what you want to do. A lot of people are happy with 50% or above for their motility of their bulls. Some people have a real drive for improving their productivity of their animals, so they don't want any sort of subpar bulls kicking around, and they'll draw a line at 70%.
Mm-hmm.
And same with the morphology.
So morphology, what type of figures should we be aiming for there? 70%, 70% all around. How long does it take, like crush side's instant, how long does it take to get a report back for morphology once you do send it away?
So I'm a morphologist, so I do it myself.
Yep.
If you do half a day of testing, crush side, it takes you about half a day to do the morphology as well.
Yeah, all right.
Have you guys ever struggled to fit a phone in your workshop pocket? Because I know I have. And unfortunately, I've lost a couple in a trough because I couldn't do the button up. Anyway, getting a bit sidetracked, but it's one of the things I love about the Entola work shirts. And I'm proud to say that they've jumped on board as a podcast partner for the season and also this episode. Not only have Entola generously kitted me out in some of their awesome shirts, they are also offering all listeners $20 off their next order. So If you want to get some shirts before Christmas and kit yourself out for the next season, be sure to head over to the website and as you check out, type in Call Home 20. That's Call Home, all capitals, the number 20, and you can get $20 off your next order. So jump in quick because there is a limited number and make, be sure to grab yourself a pretty sweet work shirt. And you also do semen collection, you said. So with the process of collecting semen off a bull, how do you go about that? Like, are you going out to these studs, collecting it?
Yeah, it's really good to go out to a property, like you've just said, and
see it.
Rock up there to do a testing or a collection and the neighbours are there.
Yep.
Or the neighbour's daughter's there that's a bit keen and wants to learn some new things and they've just come over just to see it, how it operates and how it happens. And they want to see – I've got a system where I can put the motility of the semen up on the screen
yep.
of the laptop, and that's really good for people to be able to see visually what's mm-hmm. going on, not just trying to look down a microscope. But, yeah, the actual art of it is it's stimulation of the prostate.
Yep.
There's a couple of ways to do that, whether it's manually with your hand or we put what's called an electrojaculator on the prostate, and that stimulates the prostate to produce semen that
yep.
we catch in a sterile funnel and tube, and then we analyze that on site. If it's deemed good enough for processing, we will dilute that with an egg yolk media. It's a specialized media made for cryopreservation. It has egg yolk in it that the semen use for protein.
Yeah.
And that'll be taken back to the lab where we'll analyze it again once it gets back to the lab, make sure it's still all good, and then we'll straw it up into quarter mil straws, put their name on it, and then run it through a freeze process.
But Chris, I also think it's something that as an industry we've got to get better at educating the reasons why we do that. And like some of these practices, like the collection of semen from bulls and stuff like that, like, you know, you've got to be careful in how you word it and what you show, but at the same time, we've got to educate the reasons why. And, you know, there's a range of people worldwide who listen to this, and there's also people on two sides of the fence wanting to learn more about the industry and wanting to actually use it in their own business. Mm. So I think that education is very important, because that's why I brought you on, is like AI for young people getting started. AIing and embryo transfer is so important to try and improve your genetics. And that's what I want to lead into now, is some of the pros and the cons with that. Like, you've told us the process of that and how embryo transfer and collecting semen and AIing goes. But what are some of the pros that young people getting in the industry can use AIing in to better their herd?
Yeah, so in particular for people trying to get a start, if you've only got a handful of cattle, buying a bull, especially
cheap,
a good quality bull,
yeah,
certainly isn't going to be cheap. But through the utilization of AI, you can buy straws from top quality size and AI your cows and get great progeny for a fraction of the price.
So with that, like, how much is it usually costing? Like, even these days, like, bull price is just ridiculous. And you know,
not
to
so
actually,
bad this year.
Yeah, it's not so bad this year, but different. But like, some of the bull prices are ridiculous. If you do want to improve your herd, and the cost of one bull covering 70, I don't know, what figures you want to work off, 1 to 70 head of cows, like, you know, if you want to really improve, like, it's 10 to 30 grand to 50, and there's, you know, there's ridiculous amounts cost of a bull there. What is the cost of doing AIing, getting those straws of a good genetics off a bull? What type of prices are we looking at the straws, and how much is the cost to do that? And then what is the actual percentage at the end that we can expect?
So a few things to touch on there.
Yep, sorry. You can break it down, mate. I'm going to throw more questions at once.
all good. So the price of the semen is obviously varying on the quality of the animal and the breed.
Yep.
You can get a $50 straw in Brahmins and he'll be an okay bull. To get the top quality genetics in Brahman, especially if you want registered size, it's
yep.
not so bad if you're talking commercial. You know, that can be upwards of $500 a straw.
Yep.
But you come back into Angus or Brangus, different breeds, a top quality sire can only cost you $30, $40, $50.
Yeah.
So that changes dramatically from breed. But if we break down the costing of AI, you've got your drug costs, which is if we want to talk fixed, so maybe we should discuss the different types of.
Yeah, mate, go for it.
Different types of programs. So there's two main programs. One's called a fixed time AI program.
Yep.
Where we'll give the cows or heifers a range of drugs that will make them ovulate at a fixed time. Hence the name fixed time AI. And then there's a program called heat detection, where you will wait until the cows or heifers are on natural heat and you can AI them as they come through. The costing on the two are very different because you need bugger all drugs on the heat detect, but you need to be present for a lot longer time. So if anyone was going to tackle that, you'd need to know how to AI yourself, because the cows will come on heat, you know, over a week or so, and you'll watch them morning and night and AI them as they come on. Fixed time is a 10-day program in total with 3 yardings. First day they'll come in, get a device inserted vaginally and a needle. Then they'll get tipped out till day 8. They'll come in, you can remove the device, give them another course of needles, and they will come on 2 days later. So you'll yard them again on day 10 and AI the lot. There's different results varying. You'll get a slightly better result with your natural heat detection because it's a natural heat. You're not forcing an ovulation. The downside of that is you need someone on hand that can AI for that long period of time, which if you're starting out and you don't know how to AI, you're going to have to go to fixed time.
Yep.
The costing of fixed time's around $21 to $22 for the drug course.
Mm-hmm.
About $15 a head for someone to come out and AI. And then your semen cost on top of that. If you wanted to call it maybe $45 a head.
Yep.
You'd sort of come in the ballpark there.
Yep. And what type of rates are we expecting at the end of that? Like what's your averages coming out? Like what's your pregnancy percentage after that?
The biggest benefit or the biggest contributor to a successful program is the lead up.
Yeah, okay.
So making sure your heifers are on good nutrition or cows are on good nutrition, they're in a rising plane of nutrition, they're in good health, they're feeling good.
Yeah.
That will give you a much better result.
Yeah.
If you aren't so concerned on that, then you're going to get a lesser result. So you might only get 40% if the cows are doing it a bit tough.
Yeah.
They're not feeling great. And you might hit 40%. We've done programs recently getting 60-65%.
Yeah.
With frozen semen on a fixed time round. And there's also the option, instead of using frozen semen, we can come out, if you've got a good sire at home, we can come out and collect that bull the morning of and straw that semen up there and AI with that fresh semen. And that will give you a better result again.
How many head can you do off that? Like if you did it a hot semen collection and did that, how many head could you do?
Depending on the size of the collection from the bull, that's the only limiting factor there. But, yeah, you could do 200-300 head generally.
Jeez, off a good bull.
Off a good bull, yeah.
Yeah, that's incredible.
So that is really changing the game, especially in the north where – if you want to go and buy a good sire and put him with some cows, he's only going to cover, 70 head tops for the year. But if you want to line up 200-300 head and AI with his semen fresh and hit a 75% pregnancy rate, 2 rounds of that and you're at, 92% or something?
Yeah. So just taking that step back, like if you're looking to go down that path and do it, what type of program, like you just mentioned, can you do it once and then the other 50% that didn't fall pregnant, bring them in and try them again?
Yeah, you do a follow-up program, yep.
And what's the time frame between the two?
So we can preg test at 30 days.
Yeah, okay, a month later.
With the ultrasound.
Yeah.
And then anything that wasn't in calf from the AI, you just roll back into another program. So they'll be AI'd 10 days later.
So you can get that bull covering 300 head doing that way. That's incredible. That's a great way to boost your genetics, hey? Like get that genetic improvement through a herd.
Unbelievable.
Yeah. You're seeing that a lot? Like a lot of people, obviously, you know, 75 head, do my mass, that's four bulls covering 300 head of heifers. Are people starting to do that? Are they doing that like they're getting a good bull, milking him, doing that hot semen? And then are you still putting like bulls to cover the ones that are missing? Is that the good practice?
Yeah, so it's only a new sort of regime we're sort of trying to push.
Yeah.
To try and get that genetic gain from those expensive sires.
Yeah.
Trying to make sure they're getting value for their money with those bulls. So we're trying. We're trying to push that and get that knowledge out there that can be done. I suppose the limiting factor in the past has been you need to collect that bull on site. He still needs to have a semen analysis.
Yeah, okay.
So you still need to have frozen semen there as a backup.
Just in case.
Because if you collect him on that morning and his semen's no good for whatever reason, you know, he might have hurt himself or had a bit of illness in the past couple of weeks, and you collect him that morning and his semen's a low percentage for morphology or motility, you obviously don't want an AI with that. So we're going to just scrap that idea and then AI everything with the frozen semen that we've got. So it just kicks back to a normal fixed time program then.
Yeah. Mate, that's incredible. And this is exactly why I wanted you on to tell this side, because I think getting started, as you know, like it's bloody tough to try and, one, get a herd together and then get something half decent through the herd or a way to improve it, you know, and most of us cash and time poor. And I think it's really cool way and an innovative way to really improve your herd genetics using that. And I have heard of it before, but it's great hearing that explanation off you. So that's what you have been covering. Like what type of area are you covering at the moment with Generate?
Yeah, we have a fairly big footprint from Bowen through, if you drill a line through to Cloncurry, and then Georgetown, Tablelands. It's a fair bit of country in there.
Are you seeing a lot of people starting to pick this up? Like who are your main client base? Like are they younger, older, or is it a bit of a spread? And where are they mainly doing this?
All of those regions.
Commercial herd or stud herd?
Commercial fellas that have purchased a good sire and want to utilise him. It's a big footprint up there. And as for demographic, I'd get amazed. I'll get a 70-year-old producer ring up and tell me a bit more about that AI and how we can do it, you know.
Yeah. Mate, it's cool. I think it's something to showcase. This is one thing I do. Like I'm a proud North Queenslander. And everywhere you go, I think they have this paradigm that we're a bit behind when we are in North Queensland and what we're doing. And what you are doing and doing in North Queensland is on the forefront of the beef industry. And it's awesome to see and it's awesome to promote. So I suppose like you're going out to all these properties and seeing firsthand what's happening, and you have a very big footprint, like you said, genetically affecting these herds and the herd improving. And I was just curious really to see what else is going on in there that you're seeing firsthand that possibly average Joes like myself don't really see or know.
Honestly, the more places you go, you just start to realise that everyone's got their own idea.
Yeah.
I talk to someone the Brahmins are out, everyone's going blacks. And I'll literally talk to someone the next day and they'll say the complete opposite.
Yeah.
The blacks are done, everyone's going Brahmins. Brahmins are the go.
It's
such a big area that everyone's got their own sort of thing going on, eh?
Yeah, mate. It is good. I'm just having a giggle because I definitely think I'm probably sitting on the black side of the fence at the moment. I'm seeing more black bulls and more black cattle popping up everywhere. So, mate, do you also have preg testing or anything like that as well, or do you just focus on the reproduction?
Yeah, definitely do preg testing. preg testing, AIing, semen collection, semen testing, and then we've just had a shift, like you were saying, with Tropical Vets buying in to our company, which has been a great thing. Not being a vet, obviously I get a lot of questions, hit with a lot of questions vet-related, so it's a great relief to me to be able to palm them off to the vets on board now.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's going to be a great help moving forward. We can offer such a big array of services now.
So where do you see yourself next 5, 10 years, 30 years down the track?
Me personally, I hope I've got a little block somewhere.
Yep.
We'll see if that's attainable or not. Property prices are a bit hard at the moment.
It'll happen, mate. Yeah. There's a will, there's a way.
Yeah. Slowly getting a herd together, which is good. Utilising some good friendships for adjustment and, yeah, poking along.
And in case of the company, Generate, what are you guys up to?
Yeah, so we're going to, obviously with the help of Tropical Vets, we're going to continue to grow, hopefully expand. Our motto for Generate is for the North. You know, that was why we came up.
Yeah.
Was to help northern producers utilise these services, you know, utilise this technology.
Yeah.
It's not that hard to do. An AI program really isn't that hard to do. Honestly, the hardest thing in the North is to try and keep bulls out of your cycling cows. So as long as you've got a bit of handy fencing around or the ability to whack up a bit of fencing, keeping those heifers out of your bulls for 10 days is the hardest thing.
Yeah. I think everyone's had that problem.
Yeah.
Chris, you just mentioned before that there's a tool that you use to help producers decide whether to buy a bull or go down the AIing route. Can you just explain a bit more and what is it?
Yeah, so it's a tool we borrow from a company called Minitube. They've developed it with their partners in South America. It's an Excel type spreadsheet over many sheets that we can input all your farm data, your running costs, cost of bulls, cost of anything involved with your production, and then we can analyze them between just running bulls and then implementing an AI program or implementing an AI program and a follow-up AI program, and it punches out at the end a cost analysis and benefit, really in-depth look at how much benefit AI can bring to your operation. And 9 times out of 10, you can play with the cost of semen, you can play with the cost of veterinary costs or AI costs. 9 times out of 10, AI comes out in front.
Yeah.
Simply because of the weight gains you get. At the end of the day, we're selling kilos of beef.
Quality.
And if you can get kilos into your AI, into your program early and calves on the ground earlier in your season, that's going to translate into kilos at weaning time.
So for those interested, do they just get in contact with you for that, and do you work with them with this, helping them come up with the figures and running those figures?
Yeah, definitely. If they want to contact us and express an interest in AI Unlock to analyse the benefits that could be done there, we'll come out, sit on the phone, or if they want to come in, call into home and we can have a yarn and run through the numbers, it's easy.
Mate, along your journey, have you had any mentors that have really helped you out?
Not really. Probably George Scott was a big help to me when I was at Lake Nash. He put a lot of trust in me running that camp and gave me a lot of confidence.
And the other one I do ask is the schools one, but I suppose a different take for you is, what type of schools have you done that would have helped? I suppose the other question would be, what type of schools would you recommend along this line for producers that were interested? If they did want to go down this path, where should they invest their time and money to learn more?
So we offer AI schools throughout the year. Been a bit busy this year with everything going on. We haven't got around to doing one, but we certainly will be doing one early next year.
Yep.
So if anyone wants to get on board with that, hit us up. Early next year, we're also going to hold a information day. We've got Peter Chenoweth, a world-renowned andrologist coming to do a talk on morphology. We're going to have someone come up and talk about breed plan and EBVs,
yep.
Really explaining the ins and outs of EBVs and how to use them. I know a lot of producers hit that first word and, oh, it's estimated. So, well, yeah, it's estimated, but it's still a tool that you should probably be utilising. It far outweighs guessing. And on the back of that, we're going to then have a big chat about how individuals can utilise AI and really package that whole deal into a day.
Are you doing that in charters?
We'll do that in Charters Towers, yeah.
Yeah, good stuff. Mate, that's pretty interesting. I have to sign up. Mate, and lastly, what would be your one piece of advice that you give to someone, whether that's life or just starting out in their career or land ownership journey?
Just have a go.
Have really. A crack.
Just have a crack. All you can do is fail and you'll be back where you started. You just got to have a go, eh?
That's good. Mate, before I let you go, I just want to give you the opportunity to give a shout out because I think there's going to be many people wanting to get in contact with you. So what is the best way to get in contact with you if they are looking to get your services in North Queensland?
Yeah, either Facebook or our website, generaterepro.com.au, or hit us up on the socials, yeah.
Good stuff.
Very easy enough to find there.
Mate, Chris, thank you very much for your time today. I greatly appreciate you coming in and, I'll chat to you soon.
Thanks, mate. Appreciate it.
Thank you very much for listening to another episode of A Place to Call Home. And also, that's the end of season 2. So a massive thank you for everyone who's followed along, listened to the episode, shared with friends and family. You guys are rock stars. I greatly appreciate it. Also, I want to say a massive thank you to all the guests who jumped on this season. You guys made the podcast. I greatly appreciate you guys jumping on board and sharing your knowledge. So thank you very much. To finish off, I want to leave you with the quote of the day, and this one comes from Elon Musk, and he says, "When something is important enough, you do it even if the odds are not in your favor." Have a great day.